Dear Jesus, may I enter into the eternal divine order of God to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in this same manner, may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires, and may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit and infuse in me true light, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. I want to begin with November the 9th, 1931. And here we have an experience of the ecstatic love that God has for us. It's inexplicable, but it's ecstatic as well. And to give you a bit of background, I just want to read a verse for you from the prophet Zephaniah, chapter 3 and verse 17. The Lord your God is in your midst. He's a victorious warrior. He will exult with joy over you. He will renew you by his love. He will dance with shouts of joy for you as on the day of festival. That just about expresses what we're going to read. It's really beautiful. But I'll give you a few more texts that you can look up yourselves. Proverbs 8:31, the Lord delights to be with the children of men. Matthew 7:11 and Mark 3:14. Now, in Mark 3:14, we're told that Jesus specifically chose the 12 apostles to be his companions. He wanted them with him. And you're going to hear it all the time in this reading that Jesus wants us to be with him. He doesn't want us to leave him for a moment. And that's typical of people who are in love. And so Louisa said, my abandonment in the divine volition continues. Oh, with what tenderness the divine will awaits me on its maternal lap. So here's a new idea we're going to have, that the divine will is the mother. I would have automatically thought of a father, but the term mother is going to be used in a few of these messages. So, with what tenderness the divine will awaits me on its maternal lap to say to me, daughter of my will, never leave me alone. Now, God has had, maybe I should put it this way, the divine will has had the deprivation of the human will since the fall of Adam. And he has suffered incredibly during all these millennia. And so he finds somebody who will live in the divine will, and he is like someone who has just fallen in love and wants that person with them permanently. Never leave me alone. Now, he means every single second of your life. Never leave me alone. Your mother wants you together with her. Now, the mother is the divine will. This can be very confusing because you might presume it's our Blessed Mother. He's talking about the divine will. And the reason why he's using the term mother is that it's the origin of your life, the one who gave birth to you. So your mother wants you together with her. I want your company. Now you see who it is. I want your company in the incessant work that I do for all creatures, and that's for all time, of course. I do everything for them, and I do not want to leave them for one instant, hence the mother image, you know, a mother really with her small children and doing absolutely everything for them. Because if I left them, they would lose life. We would simply cease to exist if the divine will left us, because it's the divine will that's actually maintaining life in us. Yet there are those who do not recognize me. Even more, they offend me while I am all for them. Now, it's the expression while I am all for them gives you an idea of the suffering. So you're giving life to them, you're looking after them, you're taking care of them, you're defending them, you're doing absolutely everything, and they don't even recognize you. And it's even worse, they actually offend you. Oh, how hard is this loneliness? Now, this loneliness is the deprivation of the divine will. Okay. How hard is this loneliness? Now, on your page on the screen, the word solitude is written. And I think solitude is a wrong translation. There's a massive difference between loneliness and solitude. Loneliness means you are looking for someone to be with you. Solitude means you are quite happy to be in that situation alone. So the person who wrote solitude instead of loneliness gave a poor translation there. Loneliness is very difficult. Solitude can be absolutely fantastic. And for someone who has lived a solitary life, I can tell you it's wonderful when you really get into it. So a great difference between loneliness and solitude. So, oh, how hard this loneliness is. And this is why I long for you. He's looking for company. Okay. Oh, how dear to me is your company in my acts. Now, I gave you Mark 3:14. And that's exactly what Mark says, that Jesus chose these 12 to be with him, to accompany him in all that he was going to do for redemption. And then the sadness was that they were not able to accompany him in the end. Only John recovered and actually was there at the cross. Company renders the work sweet. It empties it of its weight and is the bearer of new joys. So the Lord is looking for our company. Now, as we go into the next paragraph, we're going to hear the term little used all the time. And it's a very interesting thing. Don't necessarily think nothingness, because she's going to say Jesus gives his little visits as well. So we have to look at how the word little is actually being used. But while my mind was wandering in the divine will, my always lovable Jesus made his little visit. So little visit is of short duration. And we have been listening to her throughout the whole of volume 20, saying that she makes her little visits in her rounds to the various parts of creation that the Lord has made. And little there, nothing to do with nothingness, it's to do with short duration. This is going to be important because in a message that's coming up, probably not tonight, he's going to talk about a prolixity of time. So somebody serving him for a very long time, not little visits. Okay. So here it's his little visit. And he told me, my daughter, my will is untiring, wanting to maintain the life, the order, the balance of all generations and of the entire universe. Now, he gets on fine in the entire universe, which hasn't gone out of his will. But keeping the order and balance among the generations of human beings is extremely difficult. The divine will cannot, nor does it want, to cease its work. You're going to hear coming up that one of the ways that the Lord describes himself, and I haven't come across this particular expression before in these writings, he calls himself perpetual motion. So the divine will cannot, nor does it want, to cease its work. More so, since each motion is as though given birth by the divine will and bound with inseparable bonds. Now, to try and explain this, he gives us the example of air. Now, he usually goes to the sun and then he goes to the sea, but this time he's taking the air. He said, an image of the divine will is the air, which you cannot see, so it's an invisible presence that gives you life. That's terribly important. And yet it gives breath to all creatures. Now, you have some extra words not required in English. It gives birth to the breath. It means the divine will is our breath. That's actually what is called Ruach Adonai, or U-A-C-H if you're using phonetics for Hebrew. It means the breath of God. So we actually breathe the breath of God, and our whole planet is a breathing planet in which one generation breathes in the breath of God and another generation breathes it out. So the older generation gives the breath back to God and the new generation takes it in. And the living generations going through their time on earth they continuously breathe the breath of God. And we have a lovely hymn on that, which we have often sung. So the divine will is the source of our life. And he tells us that this breath that comes from God is inseparable from human respiration. In other words, it is what human respiration is. And if the air was taken away, we would just simply cease to exist. So that's the next line, that we would cease to exist if the air was removed. Now, go to the next one. My will is more than air. Now, whenever he gives us an example, he will say the divine will is more. The air is nothing other than a symbol or an image to enable you to understand that it produces the life of respiration and the vital power of my divine will. So it's simply an image, so that if we meditate on the air we are breathing, we are actually meditating on the breath of God that we are breathing in. And so while the air enables the body to stay alive, the true breath of God enables us to stay alive spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically, every way. So while my will is life in itself, so God is life, God is light, God is love, okay? That's one of the ways in which you can say Father, Son and Holy Spirit without using Father and Son if you're talking to somebody who has come from a very broken background. So I want to give you John 1:14 there. The divine will is life, and it is uncreated life. So it exists forever before anything came into being. Now, God has all the acts of souls. Watch this now. And if you're using your own text, please underline it. God has all the acts of souls and the number of their acts established, but he doesn't tell us. So he has decided ab aeterno how many acts in the divine will I am going to make, but he hasn't told me. So I have to keep making the acts to make sure that I don't actually leave voids. So the commitment of these acts, because they are established by God, is taken by my divine will. So since it has been established ab aeterno how many acts I am to make, what Jesus is saying now is that the divine will is committed to actually turning those acts into divine will acts. There has to be commitment on his side and commitment on mine. The divine will orders them, and the divine will places its life in these acts. Because if it doesn't, they are not divine acts. They're only human acts. But who gives the fulfillment to these acts established by the Supreme Being? It's the one who cooperates with them. In other words, it's us. When we actually do our acts, we're the ones actually fulfilling that desire of God that these acts be accomplished. So it's the one who cooperates with them and allows herself to be dominated by the divine will. So with the cooperation and with the dominion of the divine will, the soul experiences, the word feels now is not in flesh. You're not feeling this in your feelings. The soul experiences the bond and the inseparability between the two. So you cannot have a relationship of union with God and be unaware of it. Just as you cannot really be in love with anybody and be unaware of it. It's not actually possible. So you have to be aware in some sense of this incredible thing that's going on inside of you. So the soul feels the bond and the inseparability from the divine will, and also senses its divine life flow in her acts. Now, I've used a different word there. I've used senses. In other words, that you somehow are touching this, you're understanding it, you're realizing that it is actually there. You see, whoever translated this didn't use the number of different ways in which you express the word feel. And there are lots of words like that. The word virtue is used in all kinds of different circumstances, and it shouldn't, because we have words for all the different circumstances. This is not a good translation. On the other hand, Jesus said, when the soul doesn't cooperate, she loses the dominion of the divine will, and instead of doing God's will, she does her own will. And with each act of the human will, she forms a void for the divine in her soul. This is when we're not doing these acts, we're creating voids. These voids disfigure the poor soul. And since she was made for God, I want to give you Colossians 1:16 there. Everything was made through him and for him. God alone can fill these voids, because the acts established in their number were to serve to fill her with the divine being. Now, you need to stop. I would like to stop a long time there, but I'll be like last week. I only managed to do one message with you. Just realize that the acts we're doing are not just giving glory to God. They are not just substituting and making reparation for others. They're not just saying, "My, I love you," and putting my signature on everything that God actually made. All these acts are enabling me to be gradually filled with the divine being. He's going to explain this more and more as we go on. It's just celestial, as they say. Oh, how horrible these voids are, because that means there's a distortion. God is trying to fill us with the divine being. And if some of these acts are not actually done, and instead of that we've done useless acts in the human will, then the image of God is not actually formed in us, because we can't have a distorted image of God. So it's really tragic then. How horrible are these voids? In them appear crooked ways. They're the ways of the fallen human will. Acts without divine origin and without life. Therefore, they cannot represent this divine being that wants to express itself in us. Therefore, there is nothing that ruins the soul more than her own will. Wow, isn't that something that needs to be really looked at? So, my will is an operating and incessant act. Notice continuous motion. He's going to underline this over and over again. And we have watched him stimulate Louisa to give an incessant response. I think it's beyond heroism for her. I couldn't do it, this incessant act all the time. All I can do is tell the Lord I would like to do it, and that I would like to join him and Blessed Mother and Louisa in doing these incessant acts. But to be doing conscious acts at every moment is beyond heroism, because the mind has got to operate in works and in relationships and everything that needs to be done in the home and outside of it, in your work and so on. So the divine will is an operating, that's working, and incessant act inside and outside the soul of the creature. Now, it's all right for the divine will to do that, because after all, he is spirit. Now, notice he is working within us. That means every single organ of our bodies is a miracle of God. The operation of each one of our organs is a miracle of God. So he is operating incessantly inside of us. That's physically. He's also operating inside of us emotionally and operating inside of us spiritually. But he's also operating outside of us in all the circumstances of our lives and in our relationships and in our work and absolutely everything. So St. Paul quoted a poem once, and it's in Acts 17. He said, "In him we live and move and have our being." This is what's being illustrated here. So he's operating inside and outside of us. But who receives this? Now, to receive is the very important thing. The one who receives it is the one who recognizes the divine will in all her acts. Now, here is the conscious entering in. One who recognizes the divine will loves it. One who recognizes the divine will esteems it. One who recognizes the divine will appreciates it. In a sentence like that, I will always repeat the first bit just for emphasis so that we really hear. By being recognized, my will makes... Now, here's a typical statement in these writings, which in my opinion makes no sense in English. Makes her touch with her own hand. Now, there's one word for makes her touch with her own hand. One word for seven words. Makes her experience. So, my will makes the soul experience its operative and incessant act. So, the Lord actually enables us to experience this so that it becomes part of our personal history. So what does he do? First of all, the soul, number one, feels the divine will's arms in hers. In other words, you experience the presence of God. Number two, she feels the power of its motion in hers. She's aware. Notice that none of this is in your deep unconscious and that you're imagining it. You're aware of this. She's aware of the power of the divine will's motion in hers. She's aware, number three, of its vivifying power in her breath. Number four, she's aware of the formation of its life in the beating of her heart. And that's why we have that prayer in the divine will, where we ask the divine will to see through our eyes and breathe through our breath and listen in our ears and so on. Everywhere, from inside and from outside, the soul feels herself being vivified, touched, embraced, and kissed by the divine will. That means you are aware somehow of what's actually going on. It's not happening unconsciously. And my will, Jesus said, as it sees that the soul feels its loving embraces, clasps her more to its divine breast, and keeps forming its sweet chains of inseparability between itself and its beloved creature. So once it gets a response, it's this reciprocal relationship between the two that builds up these bonds of inseparability. Now, last week I gave you the image of a parent and a child, and everything that the parent does for the child and the child's response to the parent builds up that bond of inseparability between the two of them, whereby the child will always remember the parent with love and gratitude and with this very special sense of honour and all the rest of it. Now, this is what is being described here in our relationship with God. So, by being recognised, the divine will feels as though repaid. Now, why is that? Because we were told in the first paragraph that for millennia, the divine will has been left without any response, or practically no response. So the divine will feels as though repaid for its incessant work. And with its power, the divine will, now watch this, if you're using your own text, this really needs to be coloured. And the response, when we give our conscious response to him, okay, the divine will, with its power, removes the veil that kept it hidden from the soul. In other words, God reveals himself. And the divine will makes the soul, I keep saying the soul in case you think the her is Louisa. And the divine will makes the soul know who it is that forms the life of all her acts. That you become more and more aware that it is God's actually doing this. And the more aware you become, the more relaxed you become about it, because you can rely on him infinitely. I hope he can rely on us, at least somehow. So the result of all of this correspondence between the Lord and ourselves, apart from this inseparable bond that develops, the Lord actually gradually reveals himself. He moves back the veil, and you come to know God as few have ever known him. Maybe you will come to know God in a way that nobody else apart from our Blessed Mother and Louisa has known him. None of us know what's actually going on inside of any one of us, but this is where it's going. It's a very wonderful thing. Therefore, the more you recognize the divine will, the more you will experience, notice the word feel again, how much the divine will actually loves you, and you will love the divine will more. Now, you see, the word feel is being used in all kinds of situations where it's not accurate. So the main point that I would like to stress here is that this is a conscious relationship with God, and you are somehow conscious of what's actually going on between you. You may not be able to verbalize it, but you're conscious of it. And then he gives the example, and it's a new example. I don't remember him ever giving this example before. He says, but some people are like cut flowers. Very interesting. In addition to this, he said, you must know that the soul without my divine will is like a flower that's been picked from the plant. The poor flower, yet they took its life away because it's no longer bound to the root. This is what he's after. You see, the divine will is the root. And if we're not bound to the root, then, you know, forget about it. You can't continue to live. So it's no longer bound to the root. And so detached from the root, it no longer receives the vital humours that circulated like blood to keep it alive, fresh, beautiful, fragrant. So only the divine will and our contact with the divine will preserve us, because we've been told this for the whole of volume 20, that he preserves us alive, fresh, beautiful and fragrant, even if you're beyond your sell-by date, as I am. Because it will lose all of this, because if it loses the root, which like a mother, now you see why he's talking about the divine will as a mother, the root of this life. The divine will has loved it and nourished it and kept it clasped to its breast. And while the root remains under the earth as though buried, alive, to give life to the flowers, which are his children, and to let them make a beautiful appearance, so much so as to draw the human attention with its sweet enchantment. Now, watch this. The divine will is like the root underneath the earth, buried, but it's giving life to the plant that is above ground. So the divine will is hidden in us, giving life to us and giving us this freshness and this newness and preserving us beautiful as he wants, because you're talking about the beauty of holiness. That eventually becomes obvious to the people around you. They may only begin by saying you're different, but the beauty of the soul is actually recognized, more particularly by unbelievers than believers, because they're so far away they can actually see the mountain in its wholeness and in its beauty. So as long as the flower therefore is attached to the root, all of this beauty is seen. But then he says, when the flower is picked from the plant, if it has lost its mother, it seems to assume an attitude of melancholy. In other words, it begins to disintegrate, which it does. It loses its freshness and it ends up withering. And he said, that is the way with the soul without the divine will. You wither. She detaches herself from the divine root, which more than mother loved her and nourished her. And while the divine will lives as though buried, it lives in all of her acts and in the depths of her soul. Now there I want to give you three texts that I've given you hundreds of times if you have been with me from the early stages in these writings. Luke 17:21, the kingdom of God is within you. 1 Corinthians 3:16, know you not that you are the temple of the living God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? And you've heard the same thing again in 1 Corinthians 6:19. Because here we're being told the divine will is as though buried in the depths of our being and is animating all our acts done in the divine will, making them the divine will acts. Okay, so that's what he means by to administer to her the divine humours, which it makes circulate like blood in all her acts in order to maintain her fresh and beautiful and perfumed by the divine virtues. So here you have the beauty of holiness again. Psalm 96 verse 9, worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. So much so as to form the most beautiful and sweet enchantment for the earth and for the whole of heaven. So, if she detaches herself from the divine will, she loses her true mother, that means the source of life, which is the divine will, who with many maternal cares kept her safe, held her tightly to her breast, defended her from everyone and everything. In other words, all those references in the Psalms, just to take one example, of the Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, and so on. And she ends up becoming disfigured. She is the soul. The soul ends up becoming disfigured and withering of all that is good. Because John 15:5, without me, you can do nothing. And these souls come to experience, notice the word feel again, they come to experience the sad melancholy, to try and live without the one who generated them, without life and without the caresses of that mother. So, in other words, we can't live without the one who actually gives us life and maintains life in us, just as he has given life to the whole universe and maintains life in the whole universe. So if the trees fell away from the divine will, they would just disintegrate. If we fall away from the divine will, spiritually, we disintegrate as well. So since the image of the divine will is mother, the souls who fall away can be called derelict orphans without custody and may be in the hands of enemies and tyrannized by their passions and even by their own self. Oh, if the root had reason, how many harrowing cries of sorrow it would give in seeing the life of its flowers being snatched away. But since the root can't cry out, he says, my will cries out in seeing so many of its children orphaned. But unfortunately, in the case of the divine will, they are voluntary orphans. So my will cries in seeing so many of its children orphaned, but voluntary orphans who feel all the pains of orphanhood while their mother actually is still there. She's alive. She's there. There's no reason for them to be orphans. And this mother does nothing but sadly miss and call the crown of her children around herself. So there you have the prodigal son again, that the divine will is continuously calling the human race back to itself. So let's go to November the 16th, 1931. And here we're going to be dealing with, it's like the Lord who is spirit wants to build a kingdom on the earth. But because he has spirit, he has no earth. We're on the earth and we have got to give him earth for his feet to stand on. And if we do enough acts, we can make a path for his return. And if we do millions of acts, we can actually, I should say billions, we can give him a kingdom. So we're actually part of this building the kingdom. We're not just sort of saying prayers. Louisa says, I feel myself pray to the divine will. Now, this is going to be very interesting because she says she's pray to the divine will and then she prays on the divine will as well. P-R-E-Y, not P-R-A-Y. In other words, the divine will is drawing from her because it wants to set up the kingdom of the divine will. But she's also drawing on the divine will to enable her to do it. So it's a mutual praying, she calls it. But she says it's not forced, it's voluntary. And I feel the intense need. Now, since we started volume 30, she keeps on using the term intense need. Now, in your translation, you don't have it. I feel the intense need to make a pray for myself too, that would render me happy in time and in eternity. And therefore, in all of my acts, I try to make a pray of the light of the divine will. So both are drawing on each other. Just as in any love relationship, both are drawing on each other. She said, in all of my acts, I try to make a prayer of the light of the divine will. I try to make a prayer of its sanctity. I try to make a prayer of its very life. So how does she do it? Make a prayer is that she's calling on it. So I call the divine will. So this is our prayer and our acts. Secondly, I press the divine will. So this is the pray continuously that Jesus told us about in the Gospels. You pray continuously. I think it's Luke chapter 11 is what I remember. I press it. And she said, I want to capture it in my acts. She really wants to pull the divine power out of heaven and into her acts so that her acts can in fact be used to set up the kingdom. I want to capture it in my acts. I want to enclose the divine will in my acts to be able to say each act of mine is a prey and a conquest that I make. Now, usually Jesus is the only one who uses that language, but she's now quoting him. I make a prey and a conquest of the divine will. In other words, through my getting through to God in prayer, I am pulling down the power of God into my acts to enable this to happen. So it's a conquest that I'm making. More so, since the divine will, having prayed my will, without a will I cannot live, and therefore it's fair and right for me to make a prayer of the divine will. And in this praying of each other, it seems to me that we maintain, my book says the correspondence, we maintain the relationship. We maintain, the translation says, the game. I would think you would say the plan. So this relationship in which God has decided to use this creature to open the kingdom of the divine will, and this creature has decided that she's pulling down the power of God to the earth in order to do it. And she calls this a game, I think is not correct. A strategy would be an awful lot better. And this is the strategy that she says both sides use. And the whole thing is all about love. And you're going to see, not only in this message, but in all of the messages in this book, that if love isn't the source, God isn't interested, because God is love. Now, while I was thinking about this, she said, my sweet Jesus seemed to be pleased in hearing my nonsense. And I said to myself, now watch the term little turning up all the time. After all, I am little and just newborn. That actually isn't nothingness. It means I am small in size, like an infant, because she's using the term newborn. If I speak nonsense, it's not a big deal. In other words, if a child speaks nonsense, it's not a big deal. But rather, one has to make allowances for me, because the little ones, you see, the babes, are prone to speak nonsense, and many times Jesus delights in the nonsense spoken out of pure love. That's the bit that makes sense to him. If the communication isn't love, it's not the communication that he has any interest in, because God is love. So what she calls her nonsense spoken out of pure love is that she's trying to get this power down from God to do what God actually wants her to do on the earth. So visiting my little soul, you're talking about tiny, I think nothingness is a different thing. You can dispute that, which is all right. Visiting my little soul, he told me, my little daughter of my will, indeed everything that passes between the creator and the soul, the acts that she does and what she receives from God, serve to maintain this relationship. For them to know each other more, because in this relationship we come to know God very deeply, and he comes to know us very deeply. Because how do you come to know somebody? It's by living with them. It's by entering into a love relationship with them. That's how you come to know them. If you want to know me, come and live with me, we say. So they get to know one another more. And as we're up now in volume 30, you see Louisa knows Jesus very, very well. She is much more confident in taking risks and saying things and making moves than she was in the early volumes. It's just beautiful to see her confidence here. So they get to know one another more, and the result is they get to love one another more, because the whole thing is about love. Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10. We were given this right at the very beginning of redemption in the Old Testament. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your being. And then Jesus added, you're to love your neighbor as yourself. So they get to know each other, they get to love one another more, and they keep up the, I'm not going to say game, because I don't think that's the right translation, they keep up the strategy that we've just spoken about above. To obtain the intent that God wants from the soul, that's number one, and number two, what the soul wants from God. Both of them want something from each other. And they keep up this relationship to achieve what they want from each other. So each act is part of this strategy. Each act that we do in the divine will that is prepared to obtain the most beautiful victories and make a prey of each other. The act serves as material. Now this time it's correct, because this is earth and we have material things there. God is spirit and he wants to inhabit the material. It serves as material in order to play and as pledge in order to have something to give to the winner. God, by giving, puts in his pledge, and the soul, by doing her act, puts in her own. Now, what we do is we make the act, we ask the divine will to invest that and turn it into a divine will act, and that's his pledge. And God, by giving, puts in his pledge. The soul, by doing her act, puts in her own, and they set up this strategy. And our goodness, Jesus said, is so great that we make ourselves weak. Now, again, I want to change the word weak and say little. Watch this. We make ourselves little so as to let her win. Now, if you want to know why I'm saying this, just remember yourself as an adult playing a chess game or any kind of a board game with a young child, and both of you make moves and strategies, but the adult knows that sometimes the child must win. So you will do things to let the child win. That's what Jesus is saying. And that's not weakness on the part of the adult. That's why I said I don't like the word weak. That's not weak. It's great wisdom. And it's also great love. That's why I said that the divine will makes itself little in order to let the little creature win. And then other times he said we make ourselves strong. So the opposite of little is great, so that we win. Sometimes the adult will say, no, no, it's my turn to win this, and they can win easily against the child. And sometimes they hold back and they let the child win. So you've got this game or this strategy going on between you. And sometimes he says, we make ourselves strong or great so that we win. And we do this in order to keep her on her toes. That's very interesting. And since you know all about parenting and I know very little about it, you know that you do make moves in order that the child will learn new things. And Jesus is saying, that's exactly how we deal with you, so that you will learn. If you win all the time, you become lazy and you may not learn some of the very delicate moves in the spiritual life. If you lose some, then you'll come back asking and open and willing to learn again. And then she will put in more pledges to win after having a defeat. You see, it's part of this old strategy. After all, how could the union be maintained if we were to give nothing and the soul were to give us nothing? I've told you many times that when Padre Pio was asked, why was it that God worked so many miracles through him? His answer was, I refuse him nothing and he refuses me nothing. This is what we're talking about here. See then, each act is a committing of ourselves to give greater graces, and it is a response, he says, a correspondence, okay, that you open between heaven and earth. In other words, like Jacob's ladder in Genesis and the ladder that Jesus said in John 1:51 that he fulfilled it, the ladder that connects heaven and earth with the angels of God ascending and descending. He said, our acts open this way. In the olden days, we used to call sending letters correspondence, that you were getting a message through to somebody else and a message coming through to you. So you open a way, you open a path of communication between heaven and earth. And the strategy is such that you call your creator to be with you. From the very beginning of the message tonight, he wants us to be with him all the time. And he's trying to tell us that it gives him immense joy when we call on him. And it gives him immense joy when we tell him we need him. And we need him very badly and we want him to do everything for us. He wants that because that's his invitation. Behold, I stand at the door and I knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens up to me, I will come in and I will sup with him. Revelation 3:20. I just want you to hear it from different angles. It's just that you're hearing it here through this, what I think is a very awkward way of explaining it. But you know it already if I use ordinary language. So, since each act done by the divine will in the act of the creature is a divine seed, God working in our acts, he says he turns it into a divine seed that germinates in the person who does the act. That's how we become more and more like God. And he says gradually we take the whole of the divine being into ourselves, which of course is an incredible miracle. And it germinates in her, it grows, it becomes something. The act prepares the soil on which my will sows its seed. Now again, remember the miracle of the loaves. Jesus would not do magic. He would not do abracadabra. He asked that somebody would give him bread so that he could multiply it. And here he is asking us to give him our acts so that he can raise them up into divine acts and turn them into divine seeds so that they can germinate into a divine plant in us. In fact, according to the seed that is sown into the womb of the earth, that is the plant that is born. In other words, if you sow a rose, you're going to get a rose. If you sow a potato, you'll get one. If the seed is of flowers, the flower is born. If it's of fruit, the fruit is born. Now, my divine will sows a distinct seed in each act of the creature. This is very important. So in some of them, he puts a seed of love. In others, a seed of goodness and a seed of wisdom and kindness and all the fruits of the Spirit. Galatians 5:20. 22. So the more acts that the soul does in the divine will, the more soil she prepares, in which my will prepares its distinct seed to fill the earth with these human acts. So one who lets herself be dominated by the divine will is beautiful. She's striking. Each of her acts containing the variety of the divine seeds is a note of her creator. So the more of these acts we do, the more the presence of the Creator can be seen, even by unbelievers. One act communicates sanctity, another mercy, another justice, wisdom, beauty, love, and all the rest of the Galatians 5:22. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, and so on. And with all of this, a divine harmony appears. Now, one of the things that attracts others who are troubled is to see somebody perfectly in harmony and peace. It's only then they realize that they are in chaos. And the soul has such order that it shows the finger of God operating in her. Now, the finger of God is biblical expression for the operation of the divine in us. And you'll see it, Jesus uses this expression in Luke 11:20, where he told the scribes and Pharisees who were opposing him that his actions and his miracles and his exorcisms showed the finger of God. In other words, they were divine acts. Do you see then, Jesus said, the necessity of the act of the soul in order for us to be able to find the soil in which to enclose the divine seed. That's why I say that our acts give him a foothold in which to build his presence upon the earth. And therefore, thousands of these acts would make a pathway for him. But all of us doing these acts all over the world, billions of acts from all of us, actually give him the place where he can declare his kingdom is alive. So these billions of acts are absolutely essential. So if we want the new era to come quickly, we do as many acts as possible. So do you see then the necessity of the act of the soul in order for us to be able to find the soil in which to enclose our divine seed? Otherwise, where would you sow it? As for us, we don't have soil. Therefore, she must make it for us. And she does that with her acts, so that with our seeds, we may germinate the divine being in the creature. So it's through all these acts in the divine will that he creates himself in us. It's incredible. Therefore, one who does the divine will and lives in it can be called the one who reproduces her creator and hosts within herself the one who created her. Now, that is such an unbelievable statement that you just have to take it off the book and really, really meditate on it. But what I've written in my own book is you become a living host. That your body is simply like the accidents of bread holding this divine presence within. Now, if we're holding this divine presence within, of course it's noticeable to others eventually when it becomes strong enough. At the very beginning, when we haven't done enough acts, it wouldn't be very noticeable. So we hold this within ourselves, therefore the kingdom of God is within us. Then Louisa said, I continued my acts in the divine will, and my littleness wanted to embrace everything in my embrace of love. Now notice the prayer in the divine will is universal and it's unconditional love, and that's John 15:9. As the Father has loved me, I have loved you, so you must love one another. So you must love them on a divine level of unconditional love. So Louisa wants to embrace everything and everyone in love, to be able to make my little love run in all things and everywhere. Again, the little to me is the little child. It's not actually nothingness. But while I was doing this, my sweet Jesus added, my daughter, to love means to possess, as everybody who's married knows. It's not enough to have them living somewhere else. Actually, love means possession and wanting to make the beloved person or object one's own. Therefore, to love creates a bond, whether it is friendship or kinship or sonship, according to the greater intensity of the love. Now, we're going to get a whole thing involving if clauses. So if you're using your own text, make sure you ring the ifs, because if you're dealing with an if clause, it only happens if you fulfill the if. So if between the soul and God, there's no void of divine love, that's number one. Two, if all his acts run towards God to love him. Number three, if they have their origin in love, not in piosity, not in sort of thinking I can calculate a number of acts and I will get to heaven in a very special way. No. Everything has to be in love. And if they have their origin in love and they also end in love, in other words, the entire act is love. And then fourthly, if he looks at all things that belong to the Supreme Being as his own, this says, the expression this says is wrong. This proclaims or this reveals a divine sonship, that it is a child of the Eternal Father. It's divine sonship. And to see all of the benefits of the divine sonship, just read Romans chapter 8, the whole lot of it, it's wonderful. It begins by saying that anyone who has this relationship will never have condemnation, which of course Jesus tells us in these writings all the time, that someone at this stage will have no purgatory. So this declares or reveals divine sonship, because in this way one does not go out either of the divine properties or of the house of the Celestial Father. You stay within the divine will. In fact, true love constitutes a right in the creature, a right of sonship, a right of participation in goods, and a right to be loved. That's absolutely incredible, a right to be loved by God. I mean, that's the ultimate in heaven. Each of his acts of love is a vibrating note that palpitates in the divine heart, each act. And with its sound, it declares, you see, it says is very poor translation. It announces, I love you, love me. And the sound does not cease if he does not hear the note of his creator, that echoing the sound of the soul says to him, I love you, my son. Now, there's something very important here, given to you in a very awkward way. And that is, our acts going up to God are saying, I love you, but want to be loved back. And he's saying, if you don't actually hear, that means you yourself don't sense or hear in any way a response from God. You must not stop. Why? Because Jesus said in John 20, talking to Thomas, Thomas, blessed are those who have not seen and have believed. We must go on in faith. This is not us looking for experiences. It's us responding to the challenge that the Lord has given to us. And if you don't actually hear the note coming back from God, it doesn't mean it isn't there. It might mean that the ears are not able to receive it yet. So if he does not hear the note of his creator, that echoing the sound of the soul answers him, I love you, my son. Oh, how we await the I love you of the creature, to let him take his place in our love. It's the I love yous that are coming back from us that actually enable us to enter into that triune love. To have the sweet pleasure of being able to say to him, I love you, my son. And so be able to give him a greater right to love us and to belong to our family. Because as you know, in any relationship of love, the spousal relationship of marriage or the parental and child relationships that are in the family, the more the love is expressed in action as well as words, the deeper the love actually goes. So, a broken love, he says, and one that does not make our things its own, nor does it defend them, cannot be called the love of a child, of family, a love of son. That's divine sonship. At most, it can be called friendship or the love of circumstance or the love of interests or the love of necessity. But this kind of love doesn't constitute a right, because only sons, that's Romans 8:19, have the right to possess the goods of the Father. And the Father has the sacrosanct duty, most holy duty, even by divine and human laws, to make his children possess his goods. Therefore, love always, so that you may find in all your acts the love, the encounter, and the kiss of your Creator. Now, I want to give you a few texts for that. Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 to 10. John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35. I've already given you John 15, 9. I want to give you 1 Corinthians 13, 13. The three greatest things are faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. 1 Corinthians 14, 1, you must want love more than anything else. Matthew 22, verses 36 to 40, where Jesus says that loving God and your neighbour is the greatest commandment. There's a lot there to think about. Thank you for listening. God bless.